Now, it's good to welcome back Brian Hughes, consultant solicitor of Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. Now, the last few times you've been here, Brian, we've been busy looking at family issues, be they connected with divorce or probate. But you're on a completely different tack this time, are you not?
Yes, I thought we might take a look at contract law, particularly as it affects us all in our day-to-day purchasing activities.
Okay, so where are you going to start with this one, Brian?
The fact is that whenever we buy anything, from purchasing groceries to taking out a mortgage, we're entering into a contract. Some are fair, but others are not quite so fair. And over the years, Parliament has tried to lay down some clear and straightforward rules governing the sale and purchase of goods. The first real attempt to do so was made in 1893, when the first Sale of Goods Act came into force. In addition to setting out the basics of contract law, it specified that goods offered for sale had to be fit for purpose and, depending on the price you paid for them, of reasonable quality. These were called implied terms.
Okay, well, these criteria might be thought to be somewhat subjective, so just how might a decision be arrived at as to whether or not there might be a case for a claim?
That depended on two things. Whether you'd inspected them first and were happy with the goods at the time, and whether the price was reasonable for the quality of the goods sold. If there was a latent defect, which you could not have spotted at the time you inspected them, then you could take the seller to court. Taking the seller to court was not as expensive as it is today. It was left to people to litigate if they felt they'd been sold goods that did not meet the implied terms. But to put it in simple terms, a contract is an agreement between a seller and a buyer. If you buy an item for, say, £599, but then find exactly the same item elsewhere for £200 less, then unless there's something actually wrong with the goods you purchased, you have no claim against the seller. The law does not protect a bad bargain.
Yes, it's just tough. Right, so why has it been necessary to revise the original Act of Parliament, which must have occurred because you don't hear of anyone referring to the 1893 Act these days. Surprise, surprise.
Well, indeed. Yeah, the law's been updated quite a few times. Firstly, in 1977, when some unscrupulous sellers thought they could slip terms into their contracts, which would let them off the hook.
Can you believe them doing that?
Well, to address the situation, Parliament passed the Unfair Contract Terms Act. This stipulated that any unfair terms in a contract would not be binding on purchasers and would be void. With ever-changing conditions, further issues were tackled in the Sale of Goods Act 1979, clarifying the difference between an immediate face-to-face straight sale and contracts for the sale of goods as yet undelivered, such as foodstuffs, which might have perished before they'd even been delivered, or goods that were yet to be manufactured. The Act also acknowledged that the legal age of liability had been lowered from 21 to 18 some 9 years previously. This was followed by the Supply of Goods and Services Act in 1982 and the Unfair Terms in Consumer Contract Regulations, which deal with consumer contracts, in 1997. The net result of all this litigation and legislation was a highly confusing situation where one had to refer to different rules and regulations all over the place in order to find out what redress you might have and from who for any set of circumstances.
Now, I'm curious about this, Brian. If they, when they bring in a new act, does it automatically kill off the old act, or does that continue as well, just to confuse the issue?
No, it doesn't kill off the old one to the extent that the new one doesn't cover it. So you can have Acts of Parliament, like the Sale of Goods Act, buttressing or coming up behind the other legislation.
Right. So the 1893 Act is still actually in force as well?
No, the 1979 Act.
Okay, but what about the original one?
The original one, that's been completely superseded.
Yeah, well, as you've already shown, Brian, the first Act seemed to work pretty well for over 80 years, but then a multiplicity of changes seem to have been required over the last 40 years or so, and things must be even more complex now with the advent of the internet. So what's the situation?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Scott. The ability to buy online and from catalogues resulted in complaints, for example, over the quality of some digital goods in the form of video games and music, which had to be addressed. So now we have the Consumer Rights Act, which was passed in 2015. This act is an attempt to roll up all issues of consumer redress for defective goods and services into one place. The Act covers online services as well as goods and services bought in shops. It simplifies, strengthens, and modernizes the law, giving clearer shopping rights. It covers both written and oral contracts. As with previous acts, all products must be of satisfactory quality, fit for purpose, and as described in any sales literature. This includes digital products. The goods should not be faulty or damaged when you receive them. You have to ask yourself, however, what a reasonable person would consider satisfactory for the goods in question. For example, bargain basement products won't have to be as high of high standard as luxury goods. Satisfactory quality includes appearance and finish, freedom from minor defects, safety and durability. But as previously stated, the Act is not a tool for challenging the price of a product.
Okay, but assuming that the goods don't satisfy the criteria, that they are unfit for purpose or not as described, who do you claim against?
It must always be the retailer. It's with him that you have the contract, not the manufacturer. But what you can claim depends on how much time has elapsed since the goods were purchased. Within 30 days, you have the right to return the goods for a full refund. But note that this does not apply to downloads of music, videos, games, apps and the like. Although in certain circumstances, you may be able to request a repair to or replacement of a faulty digital item or maybe a price reduction. Within the first 6 months of purchase, you must give the retailer one opportunity to repair or replace any goods or even digital content of unsatisfactory quality or not as described.
So what's the significance of this six-month period, then, Brian?
Basically, if you discover a fault within that time, it's presumed to have been there from day one, unless the retailer can prove otherwise. After that, the burden is on you to prove that the item was always faulty. You have 6 years to take a claim to the small claims court for faulty goods, but many retailers offer alternative dispute resolution schemes, which are obviously less expensive and less stressful. One important point here is that retailers are responsible for goods until they're actually in your physical possession, not the delivery firm, but the retailer. And it is to the retailer you should complain in the event of any issues.
Now, would I be right in guessing then that lawyers would not normally be involved in such issues?
Absolutely. Anyone having problems should first consult trading standards, that's the local council, or the Citizens Advice Bureau, who have a very thorough knowledge of how customers can exercise their rights.
Okay, well, one thing I note that you seem to steer well clear of, and I don't blame you, is the question of terms and conditions that you have to sign up to if you want to do almost anything from using a free Wi-Fi service on a bus or a train, or even using a phone. You buy a phone and there's reams and reams of stuff that you've got to agree to that you've just bought. The fact is that no one has the time to read these terms. And even if they had, I doubt very much of any of us would understand them because they'd be gibberish. So would the Unfair Contract Terms Act be applicable? But in any event, is this workable if, as in so many cases, the merchant is overseas? Do you have any advice on that?
Well, I completely sympathise with what you've said, Scott, because it is difficult, isn't it? But if you sign up to something, you're deemed to have read the terms and conditions presented to you by the supplier. If the terms were subsequently deemed unfair, the seller would not be able to enforce them against you. The Consumer Rights Act and the Unfair Contract Terms Act, to the extent that it was not covered by the Consumer Rights Act, would be applicable. And that's what I said about the Sale of Goods Act, stepping underneath. If you contract to purchase goods or services from overseas and the goods are defective, regrettably, you are unlikely to have any recourse. If, however, you purchased by a UK credit card, you might have a degree of protection, but there's no guarantee.
Well, it seems that that's probably the best option, whatever. You can get something back. Well, thanks for all that, Brian. Have you thought about your next topic yet?
I thought we might look at terms connected with, or issues connected with redundancy.
Fair enough. All right, we look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed.